Good evening, and welcome once again to Your Legal Rights. I'm your host, Jeff Hayden. My co-host tonight is attorney and Emmy-nominated legal analyst, Dean Johnson.
Hey, good evening, Jeff.
Tonight, we'll be discussing a topic that touches every one of us as workers, business people, consumers, coronavirus in the workplace. The coronavirus pandemic has led to sweeping changes in the law of the workplace, all of which are designed to soften the impact of COVID-19, to keep wages coming in, and keep businesses alive. As always, we welcome your calls. Tonight, we especially want to hear from you. This topic has affected every one of you, and we want to know how you are doing. If you have questions for our guests, our phone number to us in the studio is 415-841-4134. Again, that's 415-841-4134. If you're outside of the local dialing area, call us at 866-798-8255. Occasionally, I neglect to mention that while we're happy to answer all of your questions, we stop short of giving precise legal advice without all the facts relating to a given case. But we're more than happy to pass along the legal principles that can guide you in your decision-making. And as always, you can call about any question on the topic. Tonight, we're talking employment law, and especially the new laws, new regulations involving the workplace amidst the pandemic. You're not limited to the exact point we may be in our conversation with our guests. And speaking of guests, Dean, who do we have with us tonight?
Well, thanks again, Jeff, and welcome to all of our listeners out there. I know you made a great point. Right now, there's $2.2 trillion, that's trillion with a T, dollars that have been allocated as stimulus money to get us over the disaster that we call coronavirus 19. Legislators have made law after law after law in very short order. In fact, we've probably seen more changes in the employment law in the last few weeks than we have since the Great Depression of the 1930s. And what legislators have been trying to do is provide enough benefits to employees so that they can keep the rent paid and keep food on the table while striking a balance, providing enough benefits to businesses, to employers, so that they can keep the doors open and afford to pay all of those benefits and keep their employees on the payroll. This has led to a laundry list of new laws, both state and federal, and some of them are complicated. You need a CPA or a mathematician to figure out some of these things, but fortunately, we have two guests tonight who are eminently qualified to sort all of this out. Our first guest is Margaret Maggie Grover. Maggie is the founder of Grover Workplace Solutions. Maggie has been practicing employment law in California for over 30 years. She's represented both employers and employees. She's equally comfortable keeping her clients out of court and representing them in court. She also works as a neutral, investigating workplace claims and acting as a mediator. Maggie relies on rowing during this crisis to keep her sanity. She's eagerly awaiting the reopening of her boathouse so she can get out on the water again. Maggie, welcome.
Hey, thank you so much.
Our other guest is Tom Lentz. Tom began his career as an attorney with the National Labor Relations Board in Los Angeles. He's now a partner in the firm of Atkinson, Andelson, Boya, Rood, and Romo, where he advises and represents employers from the firm's Pasadena office. He's a past chair of the Labor and Employment Law section of the California Lawyers Association. He lectures at USC's Gould School of Law, and he frequently appears in media to discuss legal topics. He received his BA from Marquette University in Milwaukee, Wisconsin, and a JD from Louisiana State University Law Center in Baton Rouge, Louisiana. Tom, good evening, and go Tigers.
Go Tigers. Good evening, Dean. Good evening, Jeff.
Good evening. Welcome.
Hi, Maggie.
Hey.
Just to start off the discussion, I imagine that like a lot of attorneys, both Maggie and Tom, that your phones have been ringing off the hook, that your clients, whether they be employers, employees, unions, or whatever, have lots and lots of questions. Could you tell us, what are the most common questions you're hearing now, and what are the answers? Maggie, you first.
So one of the questions that I got a lot right after the family's first Coronavirus Response Act came out was, does the California shelter in place and the Bay Area stay at home order trigger automatically a right to get paid sick leave? And how am I supposed to pay for that?
Yeah, well, that's two big questions. I mean, first of all, does it trigger sick leave? There is a new sick leave legislation in place now, right?
So there is enhanced sick leave at the federal level that gives people essentially 2 weeks of paid sick time, but it's not just because there's a stay-at-home order. If the company shuts down, lays people off, and there's no work for them, they don't get sick pay. On the other hand, if they have symptoms of coronavirus, have coronavirus, caring for people who are may have coronavirus, or have children who have been displaced because of coronavirus or related things, they may be entitled to some pay.
Now, if somebody comes in, an employee comes in and says, you know, boss, I've got coronavirus, I'm going to take some time off. I mean, what if the employer is, God forbid, not truthful, or if he turns out to be wrong? I mean, do you have to have coronavirus in order to collect under this law?
You don't have to actually have coronavirus. You can have symptoms of coronavirus, have been tested, be waiting. You can have been told that you are particularly susceptible. You're over, you may have lung disease or any of the other conditions that make you more susceptible, and you want to stay home and your doctor recommends that you stay home. Or you may have traveled to some foreign country and have been told by the government when you came back home, you need to stay home for the next 2 weeks.
So it's kind of a good faith test here.
Yes, but the employer can require some documentation, a statement from the employee about what reasons they are using to trigger it, and the reasons have to fit within the family's first Coronavirus Response Act, which I'm not going to be able to say very often.
Understood. Tom, you know, I know you represent a lot of employers. I imagine you're getting the big question, Tom, my business is down. How am I supposed to pay for all of this?
Yes, that's among the questions. It's been a fire hose of inquiries about different things since coronavirus hit. Before the local orders came around, it was, can I take temperatures of employees? Because we understand fever is a potential issue. And then as employees are, you know, for one reason or another, not able to work, perhaps they've contracted the virus, been exposed to somebody, been traveling, or maybe they did have that fever and there is that concern. Businesses are worried that they cannot maintain continuity, that they're just not able to continue. And as productivity slows down, cash flow slows down, and there is a whole tidal wave of things that flow from that. And that has led to, more recently with the CARES Act, employers seeking information about getting loans.
So tell us a little bit about that. We have this, it seems like employers are almost caught between a rock and a hard place. Their business is down, they may be required to close altogether. And yet, if they, you know, if they keep open even a little bit, an employee may come and say, hey, got coronavirus, you're going to have to pay me sick leave, you're going to have to pay me, I think, wages while I'm off. How has the government done anything to deal with this? How does the government answer that question?
Well, you know, the government, I think, government moves slowly in most instances. This has been an instance where, in some respects, government has moved quicker than anyone is used to from the legal profession side of things. It has been just constant. Every day, there's something new. And so we have to stay tuned to that and be mindful of that as we talk with our clients. And I think that you know, employers need to tune in on that as well. I mean, they're providing livelihoods for a lot of people. The employers I'm working with generally want to do the right thing and treat their people well. They're hoping that this is a short-lived situation where the good people that they have recruited and employed are able to be sustained and get back to work at the earliest opportunity with minimal disruption for anyone.
I think that's the idea, is to minimize the disruption both on the employer and employee side. Make sure that you've got food on the table and you can keep the doors open. Maggie, I think I interrupted you there.
I was just going to say, I'm finding employers are looking for creative ways to keep money coming in, to keep providing service to the community. For example, a light manufacturing business may convert to making masks so that they are providing a service that's useful in this time and keeping their employees working. So people are actively looking for ways to continue to be productive and to give to society and their employees.
Well, I suppose the first decision would be, do you stay open or not? And there are several classes of businesses, right? Essential services can stay open in most places, but how do your clients decide whether they're essential or not?
Well, with the California stay-at-home order, there is a laundry list of essential services, focusing on healthcare and services to the disenfranchised, making sure that all of us can get our groceries and our drugs, the essential functions of life. And then different locations have a different lists of what an essential business is. So you might have to check your county or your city list for whether you're an essential business. And then there are businesses that are not on the list but are fighting to stay open and have themselves redefined. Like there was I heard on the news that there was a gun shop that was trying to decide that it was an essential business because people are dramatically afraid of what's going on. Like, they're going to shoot the coronavirus? I'm not sure, but I've heard the gun sales are way, way up.
You know, you almost read my mind. I was going to say that I was driving down our main street here on the peninsula today, and the one business that I noticed that had its door open was the local gun shop. And if you go on the internet, there's all sorts of advice now. What kind of gun to buy in the coronavirus crisis? You know, what guns not to buy? And I'm just not sure what they think they're going to be shooting at, but apparently by some lights, gun shops are critical. Tom, you know, I suppose, you know, you can decide whether you're essential or not. If you decide that you are essential or under your local and state ordinances, you can stay open. Is there a difference between let's say you close down just because you want to close down. You don't think it's worth it to stay open. Is there a difference in the way the law treats somebody who is forced to close down because they're non-essential, or somebody who could be essential but just says, you know, it's not worth it?
Well, I think, you know, it's important for every business to look at the applicable orders. And as has been mentioned, you know, there's the state order, there's county orders, there's city orders. And so it's always a matter of finding what's the strictest standard and living by that. And some people may say, you know, it's just not worth it for me to stay in business during this stretch, in which case maybe they do a reduction in force. Maybe they put people on furlough. That term has been kicked around quite a bit in recent weeks, and as compared to a layoff or other employment action. And I think it all turns upon, is there an expectation that employee is going to come back to work? And so the employer's got decisions to make. A lot of times it's driven by a mix of labor cost, treating employees well so that hopefully when things pick up again, you can come back to work, and just, you know, meeting those moments of crossing T's and dotting I's and so forth that the various orders come out with. So yeah, it's a wide variety of issues, but I mean, the vast majority of businesses that I'm dealing with want to stay open.
I would imagine, and I would think if you were deemed an essential business and under all of the applicable laws, you could stay open if you could want to. you would want to, because, I mean, let's face it, those essential businesses like grocery stores and hardware stores and office supply stores are doing a good business right now. I mean, I never thought I would have to stand in line to get into the Safeway. I have to stand in line a lot of times to get out of the Safeway, but I never thought I'd have to stand in line to get in. So we're talking about furloughing employees. It kind of seems to me like employer clients are caught between a rock and a hard place. If you close down the business, then you've laid off or fired or furloughed employees, so you run into bigger difficulties there. On the other hand, if you keep the business open, then you've got to keep the business safe for all your employees, so you run into issues there. How are you dealing with these issues? And I'll just throw it open to both of you to let me know how you're dealing with these problems.
It is a day-to-day issue, and I'll throw out just some examples that some of my clients are in the construction industry, and construction has been deemed essential by the various orders. Ironically, in the state of Washington, where I also practice a bit, it's not considered essential unless it's related to something else that's essential. So the contractors there aren't working. But in California, the contractors have to really pay close attention to who they're working with, because they're often in mixed groups with other businesses in the same location. Perhaps, a plumbing contractor and an electrical contractor. And so it's important that whoever the business person is, whatever business it is, that they are looking carefully at what are the dynamics, what are the moving parts on this site at this stage, and who's going to be interacting. And if there is some suspicion that someone's been exposed to someone with the virus, they need to, think, is it better to and not work this day? Is it better to, say something? Is it, what sort of information, what sort of messaging do we have? Because even the words you use to employees and others have legal significance. It's just a lot of everyday deep detail stuff.
Maggie, go ahead.
I have some employers that are doing things that I'm not entirely confident they could do, like requiring people to take their temperatures when they come into work, because that could be an invasion of their right of privacy. But I've also not heard anybody that's really pushed back when they explain it as, this is for your safety and the safety of everybody around you. We don't want people who have a high temperature to be in the workplace and exposing everybody else. And so most of the time people understand that. I think I think Tom is right that you need to look at the particular risks associated with the environment. If the employees are going to have to be handling things that have been handled by other people, credit cards, bags, products, how are you going to handle that? How are you going to protect them? What masks are you going to provide for them? Are you going to have enough masks? Are you going to have enough hand sanitizers and wipes to clean areas? And how regularly are you cleaning the areas where the public comes into contact with anything that your employees are coming into contact with? How are you going to screen customers who may have the sneezles? And do you watch for them and prevent them from coming in and getting their groceries, or ask them to get somebody else to get their groceries, or even offer to deliver them? Those are all the kinds of things that the employers really need to look at very carefully whenever they're opening up, and to be on top of as they do change day to day. The mask requirement or suggestion has been changing from day to day, and we want to be on top of the very latest protection for all of the employees.
That's absolutely right. I mean, we just in the last couple of days here in Pasadena had a new facial covering requirement come into place, and we have to post social protocols. This is cropping up in different places at different times. Glendale in Southern California just announced that if you basically go outside your house, you have to wear a mask. So it's really every day something new, and I can tell you at my law firm, we have been pumping out information on an almost daily basis to just capture the various updates. And so there's a virtual encyclopedia available chronicling these things as they happen.
The laws were written very hastily and not particularly well, because when you do things quickly, they're often difficult to understand. And so the regulations have added a gloss to it. And then we have developing scientific information, which plays into all of these decisions as well.
And then there are even existing regulations like OSHA regulations on communicable diseases that may or may not apply in a pandemic situation. Yes?
Absolutely.
Go ahead, Tom.
Oh, yeah, just absolutely. OSHA is really concerned here about maintaining distance and making sure that people are not returning to work, unless they've had appropriate time, say if they've been infected or exposed to someone. There's a lot of regulation from multiple tiers, multiple agencies.
And the problems can get really subtle. For example, we know now that the coronavirus disproportionately impacts people of color and older people. So if you, as an employer, say, well, we're going to move out all of the people who are showing symptoms of coronavirus or symptoms of anything, you may wind up with a discriminatory impact and a civil rights suit on your hand, though.
Absolutely. Yeah, we could talk about this for a while. I think we have to do the phone numbers for the station at this point, based upon Jeff's signal.
Jeff, that's probably a good idea. You're listening to Your Legal Rights on KALW 91.7 FM in San Francisco. I'm Jeff Hayden, and with me tonight, my co-host, Dean Johnson. We have employment lawyers Thomas Lenz and Maggie Grover. Tonight we'll be discussing a topic that touches every one of us as workers, business people, consumers, coronavirus in the workplace. If you have questions for my guests, our phone number to us in the studio is 415-841-4134. Again, that's 415-841-4134. If you're calling from outside of San Francisco, call us toll-free at 866-798-8255. Again, that's 866-798-8255. You can call about any question, or for that matter, if you want to share your experiences with us, tell us what you've been experiencing. You're not limited to where we are in the conversation. And again, that number is 866-798-8255. Dean, back to you.
Well, thanks, Jeff. And I want to send out a special invitation to all our listeners to call in. We always get a lot of great questions from our listeners, but tonight particularly, this is something that touches on everybody. There's nobody out there who isn't an employer, an employee, or a consumer. And if you fit into any of those categories, which you all do, then you're impacted by this. And we want to hear how all of this is affecting you. We want to hear your story. So we want to hear your thoughts about all of these changes. So call in. As Jeff has said, it doesn't have to be directly on the topic that we're discussing at the moment. We're here to answer your questions. You have two of the top employment lawyers in the country sitting here ready to answer your questions. They do it for some of the best corporations, for unions, for employees all the time, and they're going to do it for you. So give us a call if you want to talk. I mean, even if you're just, you know, tired of talking to some, I want to talk to somebody who isn't your cat, give us a call. So back to where we were. Obviously, businesses are in, are walking a tightrope. And you are the guys who help them balance on that walk and stay up on the tightrope, which is quite a task for lawyers. It's probably one of the biggest challenges lawyers have faced years. Maggie, I'd like to come back to you. We're talking about employee sick leave, and we're assuming that we're talking about businesses that are still open. They still have employees coming into the workplace. Joe employee comes in and says, you know, boss, I think I've got the coronavirus. I just called my doctor, and she said you have to quarantine for a month. I'm going to be leaving. We know they get sick leave. Do they all? Does Joe employee also get paid?
That he gets paid for 80 hours or essentially 2 weeks. If he's a part-time employee, it's going to be on a pro rata basis of that time for his own health care. He may also get additional pay if the employer regularly provides sick leave. That would be on top of the new family's first sick leave, which is capped actually at $511 per day. I don't know where that number actually came from, but that's the cap for the family's first sick leave. And then many throughout California, we also have paid sick leave, so they may have an additional 3 days or up to 9 days if they're in one of the jurisdictions that has the more robust laws on paid sick leave and haven't used any of it. They get to use the family's first.
And let me turn it over to our caller. We have David in Berkeley. Welcome to Your Legal Rights.
Hi there. Can you hear me?
Yes, you're on the air. Welcome.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call, and thanks for doing this program. This is a wonderful program and an incredible community service, even in the best of times, not to mention the worst of times. My question has to do with collecting unemployment in a specific situation. I am very fortunate to work for an employer in Berkeley who's extremely conscientious and honest and ethical. And our facility, which is a fitness facility, was closed down even before the five Bay Area counties were closed down and before the state of California was, you know, put under this the shelter-in-place order and before the legislation was passed on a federal level. Our employer, when the gym was closed down, advised the employees to file for unemployment, but he declared his intention at that time, we're talking early March, of continuing to cover the staff's salaries to the extent and for as long as he was able to. We get paid twice a month, and to my astonishment and gratification, when I checked with my bank over the phone from the last pay period, he in fact was able to cover the salary for the last 2 weeks of March. So I filed for unemployment prior to that, not knowing whether that was going to happen, and I have not received anything other than an acknowledgement from the EDD that my application was received. My question is, if I start getting unemployment payments from the state and my employer is able, presumably in anticipation of eventually getting reimbursed by the federal government under the payroll protection part of the legislation, what's going to happen? Is the EDD going to ask for that money back from unemployment if my employer is able to continue paying me? How would they know that? How does that work? Any insight on that would be appreciated.
Great question. Tom or Maggie? Or both?
So I think that the EDD would expect the money to be coming back to it because you are continuing to get paid. If you're being paid at your full rate of pay, if you were being paid at a lesser than your full rate of pay, you could get some unemployment benefits, but the amount you're being paid would be deducted from those benefits, less, I think, $75 a week. I'm not sure how they would know, but I suspect that because you are getting unemployment contributions deducted from your paycheck, that it wouldn't be that hard to track. Tom, do you know any more about that?
You know, I would just generally expect it to be some proportion of the, you know, reduced earnings that the unemployment would reflect that, you know, being something less than what is normal. And anything the federal government provides would be over and above what the state provides. That's been my understanding.
With that, you're listening to Your Legal Rights on KALW. San Francisco. We'll be back right after this. David's down the line, if you would.
Support for KALW is provided by the Bar Association of San Francisco. If you live in San Francisco or Marin County, the Bar Association's Lawyer Referral Service can arrange for you to meet with an attorney experienced in the area of law related to your situation. Call 415-989-1616 or visit sfbar.org for more information. That number again, 415-989-1616 or online at sfbar.org. Coming up at 8, it's news from a Canadian perspective from our friends at the CBC in Toronto. It's As It Happens. Now back to Jeff and Dean and their guests for Your Legal Rights.
And KALW will be celebrating Earth Day this year with a 24-hour real-time recording of wetlands in Saturna Island, British Columbia. Saturna is on the U.S. border adjacent to San Juan Islands in Washington State. The broadcast starts at 12 a.m. Wednesday, April 22nd, and concludes at 12 a.m. Thursday, April 23rd. Your legal rights will be off next week as KALW presents this important day of programming devoted to Earth Day. Your legal rights returns 2 weeks from tonight as we return to the question, will justice survive the coronavirus? And with that, let me turn it back to Tom. I don't know if you had a chance to finish your answer.
I did.
And is David, David, have we been of help?
David, yes.
Hi,
yes,
David.
Indeed, you have, and I really appreciate that. Thank you very much.
That was a great question. I would just tell you to keep EDD advised of your status so you don't get in trouble that way. And I'd also say that your employer sounds like a great guy and a stand-up guy, and we're going to have some solutions for him as well.
He is indeed.
And while we're on the subject of great questions, let me turn it to Greg in Palo Alto, a frequent caller. Greg, welcome to Your Legal Rights.
Hey, Greg.
Hello. Thank you for the program. Just a couple of comments, I guess, not so much a question. I think I'm probably a little bit more critical than maybe some people about this. I think that the counties, Santa Clara County and some of the other Bay Area counties, moved fairly quickly, but I think they should have realized that they should have moved sooner to do something about this when the information was coming in from China, et cetera, Italy, you name it, about how serious this was. And I also think they should have been more stringent on safe distancing and the wearing of masks, et cetera. I think they realized a little bit too late that the first order wasn't sufficient, so they had to issue a second order. I also think that there were, you know, if you read the orders, and I've read the first one in completely in some parts of the second one, there were a lot of exemptions that left real big loopholes in the order. One was them for essential businesses, which you've covered a little bit tonight, but they included things like public infrastructure. And I had a real problem with this in Palo Alto because there was a huge parking garage that was being built. It's been going on for almost a year. And they considered this a public infrastructure essential business to carry on. And that went on through the second order. But then with the second order, the county said, you know, look, you've got to shut these construction sites down. And that's happened, but it's taken forever for them to do it. And they weren't maintaining safe distancing on these sites at all. So I just think that the county, and what I'm hoping is this, after issuing the second order, and there was a fair amount of noncompliance that I noticed, at least at this one construction site, I'm really hopeful that both the counties and the state, and it sounds like they're going to be, are going to be extremely careful about lifting or easing the restrictions. Because we don't need, I mean, already you're starting to see some of these other countries, I think it was maybe Korea and maybe China, with new cases breaking out. And don't know exactly the origin, that's a little bit fuzzy, but I think there's a huge risk if you don't have a lot of testing, et cetera, in place, that you could see, a real second wave of the virus, which could be even worse than the first one. So I'm just hoping that they're going to be really careful about this.
Yeah, I think you're absolutely right. I think people are legally and in terms of the science and the physics and the biology of this thing, I think we're all feeling our way right now. And that's what Maggie and Tom do for their clients. It's we don't have, lawyers are the only people who like who rely on the fact that people have figured out stuff in the past. We rely on precedent. Right now, we're walking into the uncharted territory where there is no precedent. And one of the questions that occurs to me is the governmental responsibility. Did the government exercise reasonable care in protecting the public? You can look at what's happened here as the biggest mass tort in history. But where's your remedy? Where's the court where you're going to get redress against who were responsible? Going back to David's question, you know, David has what sounds like a real stand-up employer. He's paying everybody the. But that's got to come. That money's got to come from somewhere, and his gym is closed. Is there any relief for the employers out there?
There is, and there's a number of different economic relief packages available through the CARES Act, and the most famous of those so far seems to be what's called the PPP, the Paycheck Protection Program, if I have that right, and many businesses have been seeking loans. To get money to cover payroll related expenses. And there are limits on the.
If you'd like to make a call.
Someone's trying to dial in, it sounds like. There are limits on the salary that can be funded through such a loan. If you earn more than $100,000, you're not going to get more than $100,000. But the whole idea of this is to provide a bridge, provide some additional support for those businesses so that they can keep going and sustain their workforce.
Let me turn it to Tom and San Mateo. Welcome to Your Legal Rights.
I have a question. I file for unemployment. I'm an Uber driver, and my hours have been significantly reduced due to the coronavirus. And I indicated on my unemployment that I went from full-time to part-time. And the question I have is, since I'm still, you know, driving, if any of the weeks exceed the $450 allotment for unemployment benefits, will I just not get benefits that week and then continue to certify in weeks that I'm under, I'll get, you know, the difference? Or will I completely, null and void my unemployment claim if I exceed that $450, allotment or whatever payment amount while driving? Can you, either of you, answer that?
A quick question first for you, Tom. Are Uber drivers considered employees, or are they independent contractors?
No, we're independent contractors, but I know that under the with this new coronavirus stimulus, that they're going to have some space for us somehow, either through the PUA or through the regular unemployment, filing.
Yeah, in fact, Governor Newsom announced that there would be some unemployment benefits, expanded unemployment benefits for independent contractors even today. Tom and Maggie.
So you're correct, Dean. There are expanded unemployment benefits for independent contractors and gig workers, which is, I think, the way that people classify the Uber drivers and others similarly. I think that when you look at the unemployment, the EDD website, a lot of it says, oh, we're going to take this on a case-by-case basis. We're going to take this on a case-by-case basis because I think it's new to the EDD. I think that you can continue to get unemployment benefits even though your compensation goes up and down during the time that you have reduced work available for you. They will deduct an amount based on how much you earn each week, is my understanding. It's not the full amount you earn each week, but it's a proportion of what you earn each week that's deducted from the maximum benefit.
Okay. And is that even if I exceed the $450 weekly amount? Like, let's say 1 week I earn $600. What happens to my, obviously I won't get paid that week, but do I continue to get benefits beyond that week?
I believe that you do.
Okay.
You will still report in on a weekly basis your earnings and let the EDD know truthfully what you've earned or not earned, and they'll make a determination based on your earnings as to what your benefits will be for that week.
Okay.
But again, this is all new for the EDD, and so this is my educated assumption.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Thank you.
Tom, thank you for joining us in Your Legal Rights, and you are listening to Your Legal Rights, KALW FM 91.7 in San Francisco. I'm your host, Jeff Hayden. My co-host tonight is attorney and Emmy-nominated legal analyst, Dean Johnson. Tonight, we're discussing a topic that touches every one of us, whether workers or business people or consumers, coronavirus in the workplace. And as we all experience, the coronavirus has led to sweeping changes in the law of the workplace, all of which are designed to soften the impact of the coronavirus, keep wages coming in, and keep businesses alive. As always, we welcome your calls, but tonight we especially want to hear from you because this topic has affected every one of us. We want to know how you're doing. If you have questions for our guests, our phone number to us right here in the studio is 415-841-4134. Again, that's 841-4134. If you're outside of San Francisco, call us toll-free at 866-798-8255. Again, 866-798-8255. Dean, to you.
Well, thanks. Going back to what we talked about a little bit before, about things that are available to kind of soften the blow for employers and make them able to keep people on the payroll, I wonder if either or both of you could elaborate a little more on that. We've heard, for example, those of us who are independent contractors, attorneys, sole proprietors of our own businesses, heard about a $10,000 loan, and I think everybody hit the internet and filled out the application. We've heard about $2 million loans for employers. Tell us a little bit about what's out there and what's available and how people go about getting it.
There's a whole range of things, and as I sit here, you know, I'm not really prepared to go through the litany of them, but it ranges from depending on the size of your business and the purpose for which you want to use it. But it's there to help businesses sustain themselves, cover payroll, etc. Maggie, do you have anything further on that?
I think, if I understand correctly, the loans that are payroll supporting will be forgiven if you actually prove that you are paying the payroll. And there is also a tax advantage to people who do pay for paid sick leave under the Families First Act. The Social Security taxes get a straight up deduction for what's paid.
Yeah, there are definitely tax credits available for those payments under the family leave and paid sick leave law. And by the way, that law is only in effect until the end of the year. It is through December 31, 2020. And I think that the forgiveness is a very interesting point because a lot of businesses are looking at the loans that are out there as perhaps free money, at least to a certain extent. And you may not get 100 cents on the dollar back of what you borrow, but it might stimulate a business that might otherwise be skittish about borrowing to get into that market and to reach out. And I know that a lot of businesses, are reaching out to banks that are new to them. It seems like if you're reaching out to a bank that you're more familiar with, you're more likely to get some success in seeking that loan. There's been a feeding frenzy since a few days ago, since the loan period opened up. But we are hopeful that there will be perhaps some more loans available if people can agree in Washington, D.C.
Yeah,
Another thing that's been done for small employers, there is extended leave for people that are caring for children whose child care or schools have closed. And that extended leave, if there's a small employer that thinks their business is going to tank because they're paying for these, may get an exemption. It's an employer who's under 50 employees, and they have to show that the cost of paying the employees for the sick leave would cause them to not be able to meet their current financial obligations, or that putting the employees on leave because the employees are so important to them would mean that they couldn't operate the business. So it's very defined restrictions, but there is that little glimmer of hope for small employers as well.
It's an interesting dynamic in that the family leave laws have typically just applied to employers with 50 or more employees. And rather than looking at, you know, who is of a certain size and larger, it's really an effort to reach out and protect people in the smaller workforces. So it is really a different shift in policy altogether.
Yeah, employers that say they read, oh, there's this extended family and medical leave, and there are many of them that think, well, I'm so small, this law never has applied to me. And for the last, since it's been enacted, it hasn't applied, but it drops down to small employers. And so small employers need to be aware that they may have obligations under extended family medical leave.
And add to that, that if you are in San Francisco or Los Angeles, you may have enhanced requirements beyond what the federal government has recently set.
And greater restrictions on what you can ask the employee to provide as well, in terms of verification of their need for time off.
Indeed.
Well, yeah, I think you make a very good point that this is one of the first times I can remember that focuses have been placed on small businesses, because I think there's a realization that small businesses are really mom and pops depend upon that business for their food, to put food on their table and pay their rent. It's not like a gigantic corporation where no individual is really depending upon that, you know, is living paycheck to paycheck or living statement to statement.
It's really, I think, an interesting realization. Employ a huge number of people across the country. And you know, probably half of the people employed in the United States are with small to mid-sized businesses. So it's not all the large corporations that people might think dominate everything. We have a real diversity of business. And I think looking at it in terms of diversity, in terms of just the size of the business and who is an entrepreneur and where these businesses are, it's really important to protect that. It's part of our culture, part of, you know, what makes our economy strong, and just having that different, those different roots into the economy.
Yeah, and I think just the economics of it. I mean, here in Silicon Valley, we've become used to the fact that there are companies that have cash reserves of $100 billion. They're not going to go under in a month or two. But somebody who's running the corner drugstore or the 7-Eleven or, say, a sole practitioner attorney, such as Jeff or myself, may very well.
Exactly.
And in many jurisdictions, San Francisco, L.A., I think Emeryville, they have also added regulations that say these are going to apply to larger, the new regulations are going to apply to larger companies, too. And they're going to have the additional medical leave requirements and family leave requirements.
Yeah. So I think the advice is here, don't think this is the gold rush. I mean, don't. I know last week the word went around the legal community in the Bay Area that there was a $10,000 forgivable loan out there, and all you had to do is fill out a two-page application. And guess how many people filled out that two-page application? Everybody. And so now I am understanding that some of these loans are sold out. So advice, I think, would be talk to a good lawyer and a good accountant before you do this.
Yeah, and also pay attention to, you know, whether there is more relief coming down the road. There's talk about that right now on Capitol Hill.
Yeah, what are we looking at in the near future? Do we know?
I don't think it's too crystal clear yet, but that's typical there.
Yeah, I think it's really harkens back to our caller who said, "We don't know. We don't know if this thing is going to go away. We don't know if it's going to go away and come back. Is it going to be seasonal?" Have to wait.
Until testing is improved, until we're able to immunize, there's just a lot of potential waves to this. And I think whatever we can do to minimize the risk is going to be at the forefront of the people in charge of state government, local government, and hopefully federal government.
And one of the things that employers need to keep in mind is there are some biases that people have about, oh, this came from China, therefore, why must avoid people who were born in China or traveled to China? And that can end up with a discrimination claim. So make sure that you get information out to your workers about what the risks are and that the person of color is not the person that's carrying anything necessarily any more than the 20-year-old Caucasian guy.
Absolutely.
Let me jump in as we're running short on time, and we do have a caller, Chelsea in Oakland. Let me turn it over to you. Welcome to Your Legal Rights.
Yeah, hi there. Chelsea. I actually couldn't hear the last thing that was spoken about, but I did hear that it mentioned people of color, and that's actually why I'm calling in, is because there was a statement that, to my ears, made it sound like people of color might be medically more susceptible to coronavirus. And I don't think that there's any scientific evidence for that, at least not at this point. And I wanted just to make sure that it was clear that that's probably likely more due to societal racism that is endemic even in healthcare, and also trickles down to, you know, who actually has to be out there working, who has the privilege, like myself. I can stay at home and I can work from my house, but a lot of people, especially lower wage earners, often are the ones that do have to go out and they have to go to their jobs, and they're being exposed more. As well, there might not be as many services. They might not get tested as quickly. So I just want to make sure that there's not some information that might startle people about the discrepancy and how in that.
Chelsea, you bring up a very good point. I think that did need some clarification. I didn't take the remark as wanting to suggest that at all, but it was left hanging, and I think your point is well taken. I don't think that anybody suggested that people of color are any more susceptible to it, any more than the suggestion that people of color may have brought it to us. The fact is that suggesting that a virus can be contained in one community by simply raising the borders is something akin to saying that you only urinated in a small part of the pool.
Right.
The fact is it spreads, and it's going to go around. And I think that the remark that was meant about disproportionate impact on people of color may have, in a more enlightened audience than perhaps some employment circles, would be recognized as being what it is. The fact is that access to health care, working for lower wages, so having to be out there more often and be exposed more often, things of that nature are going to make it disproportionately hurt, particularly lower-income people. And I don't think the remark was intended by anybody to mean that some people have a genetic predisposition or anything of that nature. But I think that's a very good point that you brought up, because it did need clarification.
Yeah, I just wanted clarification. I had a suspicion that that was the intent, too. But it just, to my ears, it could have been a little muddy, and I didn't want that to remain muddy.
Well, I'm glad you cleared that up, and thank you for joining us on Your
thank
Legal
you.
Rights. And with that, we're getting pretty close to the top of the hour, and we've had a great and very enlightening conversation. I've found it very fascinating and learned a lot. I would like to give our guest, before we go further, before we close out, a chance for a minute and a half, for anything. I mean, if there's something that you really wanted to say, what's the one thing that you would want our listeners to know about their rights in this crisis? Tom, why don't we start with you?
Sure. This is a moment in which Things are constantly changing. In 30 plus years of practicing law, I have never seen a time period with so much change, confusion, and frankly, panic. And I think it's important to dig into the facts, determine the rules, and get the information that you need, ask for it if you're not seeing it. There are a lot of great resources out there. I'm going to plug my own firm. We have a lot of free information at AALRR.com. And I've been doing informational videos with colleagues at the California Lawyers Association, CALawyers.org. Please check out those videos. They're in English and in Spanish, and you can get information that will be helpful. This is for employees as well as businesses.
And frankly, for other lawyers as well. And the California Lawyers Association has been a tremendous resource for this state for some time, quite a bit longer than they had. That used to be the sections of the State Bar of California. They've been a tremendous resource and a great help to this program. Thank you. And Maggie, did you want to take a minute and a half or so, a minute and a half, for any closing thoughts?
So one of the things that I've heard about in the last few days is employees who are, and employers who are very stressed out by this situation, either because they're going to work or they're not going to work, or they have financial issues, or they are living with somebody who's high risk, or they've got an elderly family member. Those things happen, and people should not feel any less about themselves. Stay connected with your family and friends. Find ways to be engaged in the community if you possibly can, and just do what works for you to keep your own mental health and your sanity. And I also want to say a huge thank you to all of the people on the front lines, in the restaurants, in the grocery stores, who are providing healthcare. This is an amazing time for you. It's got to be a very tense time for you. And we all appreciate the service that you continue to provide.
Absolutely.
And, you know, you brought up one thing I wish we had more time to discuss tonight, Maggie, because I know that this has been a tremendous amount of stress for an awful lot of people. And if we were to pick up this discussion in a couple of weeks and where we left off, I would love to know more about the mental health resources and support that are available, because 6 weeks of staying in the house by yourself, people are going stir crazy. There has to be something.
Or teaching your children in homeschooling situations.
Or learning that, you know, learning your spouse that perhaps your kids are grown, you haven't spent a lot of time together, and all of a sudden you're locked in the house together for the first time in many years. The matrimonial lawyers are going to have a field day.
Dean Johnson, my co-host, classified as essential workers today.
Well, that brings us in. That's why Dean and I are considered essential workers. Dean Johnson, my co-host extraordinaire, do you want to say anything in closing before we close out?
I'd just like to take this opportunity to say to all of our listeners how proud I am of you. If there's a silver lining to this dark cloud that's come over us, it's that we've learned that we can all work together as a community to solve problems, that our government can work with us to help solve the problem, and that great lawyers and professionals, medical professionals, safety professionals can all come together and deal with this unprecedented problem. So if there's anything that we learn from this, that's going to be it, that we can work together as a community.
Well, I'd like to extend my thanks again to our guests, Maggie Grover and Tom Lenz, and to my co-host, Dean Johnson. KALW will be celebrating Earth Day this year with a 24-hour real-time recording of Wetlands next week at the U.S. border adjacent to San Juan Islands in Washington State. That broadcast begins at 12 a.m. on Wednesday the 22nd and concludes at 12 a.m. on Thursday the 23rd. Your legal rights will be off next week due to this important Earth Day programming, but we will return in 2 weeks from tonight as we return to the question, will justice survive the coronavirus? Again, this has been Your Legal Rights. This is Jeff Hayden saying good night, stay safe, and be well.